हरि ओम भूर्भुवस्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ओम मे वी मेडिटेट on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamuni, or Crest Jewel of Discrimination, by Shankara. Last week, what we studied was about meditation, and that is still continued. So let me give you a resume of what I have already explained to you and what this great seer philosopher has pointed out. In the first place, try to convince yourself that God or Brahman or your chosen ideal of God is not far away from you, but He is your very self, is the soul of your soul. It is through Him that we can think, we can act. Because of that presence, is the mind of the mind, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear. And so He is the nearmost being within us. Then again, try to convince yourself with this truth, that how that same reality is within the hearts of all beings and all things and all creatures. As we have that saying, from Brahma down to the blade of grass, there is the presence of that same reality, same Brahman everywhere. Now then, as you go to meditate, even the distractions of your mind can be used as an aid to your meditation if you can see in those distractions the presence of Brahman, presence of God. That is the secret. Of course, this conviction does not come so easily that God is nearer than the nearmost, is your very soul, is soul, so is within you. This conviction does not come all at once. It takes time naturally. But practice, practice, practice. That was what my master used to say all the time. Always. Whenever we would come and complain, he would say, practice and struggle, 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 practice, practice, practice. And then there comes the conviction that He is. Yes, you don't see Him, but you feel that His presence is there. And then it becomes easy. And another point in this connection, Shankara pointed out, that religion is not in book learning, not in the study of scriptures, but it is something that is your life. That is religion. You may quote scriptures, but they don't mean anything. Unless there is that conviction within yourself, and unless you try to live that life, that is, you must remember that just passing a degree in the theological college, you do not become a teacher of religion. But one who may not have studied anything, all the scriptures are within you. The whole book, the whole Vedas, the whole Bible, the whole truth is within yourself. And you have to realize that. Then what you speak becomes the scriptures. In our present century, present age, there was Ramakrishna. You know, Swami Vivekananda was when well-studied man. One time, you know, the other day we were reading in the Gospel. They were discussing something, and Sri Ramakrishna said, "What are you discussing?" And he said, "Oh, you are saying that you are such an illiterate man." Yes. But the greatest wise of that, learned of that age came and sat at his feet. Why? Because what he spoke was scripture. I knew one of the disciples of Ramakrishna. He even couldn't read the alphabet. No, Sri Ramakrishna tried to teach him alphabet. And he couldn't pronounce them. So Sri Ramakrishna laughed, and the disciple laughed and said, "Ah, you're no good at study." And I remember at one time, we were studying the Upanishads, and there was one verse which you could not understand exactly with commentary also. Then we came to him and we explained to him in his language what it means, and then he thought for a moment and he gave this simple illustration that, you know, the Atman is to be separated from the sheaths in your consciousness. Just as grass, if you know, you can take out the grass, the upper part, without hurting the grass itself. You see, in the ritualistic worship, for instance, you offer grass, and that is the meaning of it. You are offering the Atman. And so he immediately said, "Oh, I've got it, I've got it." It's like this. You see how simple he made it? If a man loves Brahman with an exclusive and steadfast devotion, he becomes Brahman. By thinking of nothing but the wasp, the cockroach is changed into a wasp. Now that's a legend we have. That is, whatever you think, you become. As you think of Brahman, you become one with Brahman. You are Brahman, somehow that ignorance has covered it. Now again, think of Brahman. Just today, I think I was telling somebody that what we ask you to do is not imagination. To you it seems imagination, but we are asking you to imagine the reality. For instance, there is the rope lying, but in darkness, instead of the rope, you see it as a snake. And you are afraid, you are fearful. But what we ask is, think of that rope as rope, though you see the snake. And let the dream of snake vanish. So, as you think of Brahman, what it means this, that to you it seems it is imagination, but you are really thinking of the reality. And that ignorance, that darkness is removed, and the reality as Brahman is becomes revealed to you. But you see, if you have to love, you have to love in your heart. You see, this, just remember, Shankara was a great knower of Brahman, followed the path of knowledge, and yet he speaks of love and devotion. You see, without that, without your interest, and you see, this interesting thing, love grows in your heart as you think and think and think, love grows in your heart. And the nature of God is ananda, love and bliss. And so you get that joy and that love in your heart overflowing. It comes naturally because you feel that breeze of grace, that breeze of love. Just as a cockroach turns into a wasp because it gives up every other activity and thinks of nothing but that insect, so the spiritual seeker who meditates on the reality of the Atman becomes the Atman because of his steadfast devotion. You know, Shankara defines devotion in a very interesting way. He defines devotion as constant union with Brahman. That is, constantly thinking of God. And the fact is, that is, as you constantly think of God, that supreme devotion, supreme love comes to you. Which is the same as supreme wisdom, knowledge. In fact, that supreme love does not come until you have realized God. But even before that, you see, as I have often given the illustration, as you come nearer to the ocean, though you have not seen the ocean, you feel the breeze of the ocean. So you feel that breeze, that love flowing from Him, that grace flowing from Him. And that reminds me, I think I quoted to you that the knowledge, to know that Christ loves us, St. Peter said, to know that Christ has love for us is beyond knowledge. And when we know that, it fills our heart. And then also, in this connection, let me point out, Brahman or Atman, you can think of, which is also very difficult. So, it's an abstraction. But also, one can do that. There are methods and means. But when one thinks of a chosen aspect of God, that also is one with Brahman. You know, in the Upanishads, which deal with wisdom, there also it points out, To think of a knower of Brahman, to think of a sage who has known Brahman, is to think of Brahman. That same is the same reality. You become, as he has become one with Brahman, so as you think of that holy personality, you become one with him and one with Brahman. I'll quote to you from what Christ had said. You know, I think it was Philip, one of his disciples. He asked him, "Show us the Father." And Jesus said, "Philip, you have been living with me so long, and yet you don't know. He who hath seen me hath seen the Father." But of course, he had to reveal himself to him. Then again, let me quote one truth from the teachings of Jesus, and which is so often misunderstood. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and everything else shall be added unto you." You see, what is this everything else? That all the divine attributes, as you think, as you seek the kingdom of God, all the divine qualities and attributes you imbibe. They're added unto you. You imbibe all the divine qualities. That love, that joy, that blissful consciousness. Then you live in that. The true nature of the Atman is extremely subtle. It cannot be perceived by the gross mind. It must be known by the state, in the state of samadhi, which can be attained only by those noble souls whose minds are purified and who possess an extraordinary power of spiritual discrimination. You see, Brahman or God, it can be only known in samadhi. There's no other way. And how can samadhi come to us? Through meditation. You have to be absorbed in the consciousness of God. Become forgetful of body, forgetful of everything. And you transcend this universe in your consciousness. And it is only when we transcend this waking, dreaming and dreamless sleep states, then is it that we can realize God. Not otherwise. You see, that is the experience, that is what is known as the vision of God. And that can come only by transcending, in that transcendental state. And how can we reach that transcendental state? Unless we have purity of heart, through spiritual discrimination. Now again, that purity of heart also comes through meditation. You see, it will be pointed out later that how as you think and think of God, you see other things drop away from you. You see, oftentimes we think, now I have this fault, I have that fault, and I'll try to get rid of this fault or that fault. But you see, as you think that way, that fault gets more hold of you, as it were. Instead of thinking in the negative way, move towards the light and darkness will be behind you. That is the secret again. As gold which has been refined in hot fire is purged of dross and restored to its original, to its own nature, so through meditation the mind purges itself of the dross of sattva, rajas and tamas and attains Brahman. You see, these three gunas make up this universe. These three gunas make up the mind. And so, when the sattva becomes predominant, we become tranquil and calm. Rajas becomes predominant, we become active and passionate. When tamas becomes predominant, we become lazy and don't want to do anything. No, I don't want to meditate. Tamas. I don't want to practice such and such. It's tamas. And there tamas has to be conquered by rajas. No, I must. And then rajas is to be overcome by sattva. And then sattva also you have to transcend. You know, Sri Ramakrishna used to tell this story about the three gunas, that they cannot lead you to God. You have to rise, transcend them. Sattva helps. Sattva is an aid. But you have to go beyond sattva also. And he used to tell this story. There were three robbers. And they got hold of a man in the woods who was going through the wooded road. And the man, one robber said, bind him and rob him. So he was bound on the tree. And they robbed him. And then another thief comes and says, well, as long as we have got what he got, we have got away from him, why keep him in tied, keep him tied to the tree? Poor fellow will die of starvation. And so he comes and loosens the bondage. And then the third man came back and said, look, my friend, I'm sure you can't find the way to this town. You must have lost your way, so come along with me. I'll show you the path. So he took him along with him and then said, there you see the town, you can see the lights, you go follow this path. And then this man said, oh please, please come with me, you have been so kind to me and be my guest. Then said, oh no, if I go there they will get hold of me, I am also a robber. So these are the qualities of three gunas. They rob us. But one wants to bind and kill us, the other loosens our bondage, and another shows us the path. But we have to transcend that also. A gold which has been refined in hot fire is purged of dross and restored to its own nature. So through meditation, the mind purges itself of the dross of sattva, rajas and tamas and attains Brahman. When the mind thus purged by ceaseless meditation is merged in Brahman, the state of samadhi is attained. In that state, there is no sense of duality. The undivided joy of Brahman is experienced. How wonderful truths are these. Meditate on them. You see, these are such wonderful truths. Simply reading is not enough. As you read, meditate on them. When the mind thus purged by ceaseless meditation is merged in Brahman, the state of samadhi is attained. In that state, there is no sense of duality. The undivided joy of Brahman is experienced. And then what happens? When a man reaches samadhi, all the knots of his desires are cut through and is freed from the law of karma. Brahman is revealed to him immediately, internally and externally, everywhere and always, without any further effort on his part. When you attain this samadhi once, then all your ignorance vanishes. In the Upanishads we read about this samadhi, and which my master quoted to me for the first time I heard him quote the scriptures. He quoted the Upanishads. Viddhate hridaya granthish chiddante sarva saṃshaya kṣiyante chasya karmani tasmin drishte parāvare. When you have seen him, when you have realized him, what happens? The knot of ignorance in the heart is loosed. All doubts cease to exist. All the effects of karmas are wiped away. These are the effects of samadhi. And then you live in that unending joy. Yes. We know of these great ones also feeling suffering. And they suffer at the suffering of others. You see, I quoted that to you many times. Maharaj said to me one time, meditate, meditate, meditate. And then you will find how man suffers for no reason when there is the mind of bliss in everyone's heart. And then it is that your heart goes out in sympathy and compassion for all. It's 100 times better to reflect on the truth of Brahman than merely to hear about it from the scriptures. See, if you simply reflect and think about these things, that's much better than simply studying the scriptures or hearing about it. And meditation is 100,000 times better than reflection. But Nirvikalpa Samadhi is infinitely the best of all. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi and in no other state, the true nature of Brahman is clearly and definitely revealed. In any other state, the mind remains unstable. It is filled with distracting thoughts. Therefore, remain constantly absorbed in the consciousness of the Atman within you. Control your senses and let your mind be tranquil. Gain that clear vision of your oneness with Brahman and thereby destroy the ignorance which Maya has created from time without beginning. Next we will point out again how to control the senses and control the mind and free ourselves from the sense of ego. And the only secret again he points out is to meditate, meditate, meditate. May I invite questions? Ask something. We have some written questions. If one wants to enter monastic life, what must he do? Well, in the first place you have to get acquainted with us. In the second place it depends upon your earnestness. And in the third place also you have to know us and we have to know you. And then only we can consider. How must we overcome habits that keep us from realizing God within? How can we incline toward God instead of the many things that attract and draw so much? That's a very good question. How must we overcome habits that keep us from realizing God within? What are habits? What we have practiced ourselves. Now again, our whole character is a bundle of habits, nothing else. And of course, we do good deeds and think good thoughts, and also we do evil. We have evil thoughts and we do evil deeds. We are a mixture of good and evil, as a general rule. Anybody is not completely good or completely bad. That reminds me what Christ at one time, when he was said he was good, he said, why call me good? There is only one that is good, that is God, goodness itself. But anyway, we have created our character through habits. Now, naturally, when you go to think of God, those impressions that we have created through our habits come to our mind. Can't help it. But do not give up. I give this illustration. There's an ink bottle fixed, and you have to clean up the ink bottle. Pour clear water. And the ink oozes out. And you find all dirty ink, more and more, coming out. But you continue to pour clear water. And then gradually it is cleared. And there is only clear water. Same way our mind. It has created habits, good and bad. Now, create a habit of holiness, of holy thoughts. And what is the best way to think holy thoughts? To think of God, His divine attributes. And think, of course this ink will come out. But, as I said, use that, your distractions also, as aids to your meditation. Cover them with the presence of God. God is present everywhere, even in your distractions. How can we incline toward God instead of the many things that attract and draw so much? Well, you see, ours naturally, it is natural, it is human, that we are attracted outwardly to outside objects of senses. And because the senses have been created outgoing, but in order that we can realize the ultimate truth, we must have to control these outgoing senses and turn them inward. And so it also needs practice. That's all that I can say. There is no other secret. But learn how to practice meditation and then continue to pour that clear water of God into your mind from day to day and as often as you can. And then you find that it becomes easy. Now from the floor.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. Swami, you talk about distractions, but so many distractions are little things. How can you see God in them?
Sure, that's true. There are some little things that is difficult to see God. Right, you are. But there again, you see, Swami Vivekananda, Swamiji, taught a beautiful truth. He said in the beginning, see, try to meditate. Then for a while, let distractions come. Willfully do that. And keep watch over the distractions. Where your mind is going, keep watch. And then after some time, talk to the mind and say, now mind, haven't you had enough? Come back. You see, just like a little child, he won't obey you first. Then you tell the child, all right, you go ahead, but I'm keeping watch over you. And then you see the child by itself knows that mother is watching, so he comes back. So, Swamiji points out that if you do this for some months even, you'll find less and less distractions. And then gradually your mind is cleared up.
Swami, when we have that realization, do we realize that we are that? Or do we realize that we are a reflection of that?
No reflection, no. Where would it reflect? There is nothing but one reality. So, it's not reflection.
I thought that too, but someone said, no, we are reflections of that.
No, there is that. I think there is one philosophy in this country, or one religion in this country, they say we are reflections of God. But that's not right, because where would it reflect? In order to reflect, it has to have another substance. But if there is just one reality, one substance, where would it reflect? And of course it is reflecting in this way, in the Maya, in ignorance. It's all reflection. No, you see, the sun shining, covered with clouds. Clouds are removed. The sun shines. There's no reflection. But that there is, mind is conscious, body seems to feel. That's because of the reflection of the consciousness of Brahman from within us. That's reflection. Reflected consciousness. But as you free yourself from these sheaths and reflections, you see the reality, the sun itself. Sri Ramakrishna used to give the illustration, sun and so many jars are there. In each of these jars with water, you see the sun reflected perfectly. And you are looking at the reflections as so many. Now break, there are say 7 jars. Break one jar, how many reflections are there? 6 more. Break one by one. Then what remains? Real sun. So you have to break all reflections and see the reality, one reality.
During meditation sometimes, if you feel the grace of the Lord coming upon you, then you ask or want more. Shouldn't that happen to you?
When you feel the grace of the Lord, there's nothing to ask anymore.
That isn't grace then.
You go into ecstasy when you feel that grace. Who is there to ask, you see? You're overwhelmed.
But there is a stage when you feel the presence of the Lord. But it is true, when you struggle to feel it more, you lose it.
In a sense, yes. You are right. But as you begin to feel the presence of the Lord, live in that presence. Give up the struggle then. Because you don't have to struggle anymore. Feel that presence. Feel that grace. And you'll feel more.
Swami, those of us who are struggling tend to think of samadhi as the goal. But Swami Brahmananda says that spiritual life begins after samadhi. What kind of spiritual life are we having then?
Yes, I know.
What kind of spiritual life?
Yes, I know. But I can't help it. So, first let us attain samadhi, then we shall see. Now, one more question.
Swami, you talk about separating the Atman from the sheaths. But how do you go about that?
Ah, that's a problem. Very difficult task. But there is a process. For instance, the process of neti-neti, not this, not that. And so, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the senses, I am not the organs, I am not the intellect.
That's Jnana Yoga.
Yes, very difficult. Instead of that, try to gather all the forces of your mind and concentrate upon your chosen ideal. You see, all jnanis also, those who followed the path of knowledge, also meditated on Saguna Brahma, personal God. The impersonal, the absolute is to be experienced.
Maybe that's what you do after samadhi? Is that it?
When you attain samadhi, then only you know, you have the knowledge of Brahma.
Well, I mean, then you can live that.
You can live that, of course. Then you live that, not you can, you do. Om Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai. Tejasenabhidhitamastu Mahavidvishabhai Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace. Peace.